You're listening to highlights from OTB AM, Off the Ball's new daily breakfast show. It's live every weekday morning from 7:45. Watch us on Facebook, YouTube or Twitter, or listen live at offtheball.com.
Let's move on. It's Christmas time. It's time to revel in one of our happiest things that happened this year, and that was the arrival of Tommy Walsh as part of Team Off the Ball.
This is the dream. Shohi on Ringlord. Whether you're from Cushendall in Antrim or Mount Sinai in Waterford, Ballygalgan in Down or Loughrea in Galway, Ballyshannon in Donegal or Galmoy in Kilkenny, this is what it's all about. Every young hurler, no matter where you're from about 3-4 years of age, has dreamed of playing in an All-Ireland final in Aiton. Whether it's scoring the winning score, whether it's making that match winning hook, that match winning save, that's what you dream of, and that's what gets you out into the back gardens evening after evening, weekend after weekend. For some of these players, they will realise that dream, Nathan, for the very first time, but for many of them in the Galway camp, it's the fourth time, and some two players, Kevin Moran and Michael De Brick Welsh, it'll be their second time in an All-Ireland final. So what a day we have in store. Waterford, they haven't won the All-Ireland since 1959. Nathan, the Beatles wouldn't be formed for another year. Their first album, Nathan, was Please Please Me. How many Waterford people will be saying that for the 70 minutes today? Galway haven't been champion since 1988. The Irish people, including myself and Di here, we would not know the name of that little Italian striker from Italia 90, Toto Scilacci, for another 2 years. How well would Toto play if he was out here today? The atmosphere is electric, Nathan.
Lads, I'm going to tell you something. It's the first time in history I can ever remember the crowd around us are piling in around Tommy Walsh. It's like there's a minute to go in the World Cup and there was no televisions. Everyone is piling in to hear what's happening around this lad here. It's absolutely unbelievable.
All right, yeah, so that was the start of the All-Ireland final this year. How are you doing?
Great, Jerry. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Let's look back a little bit at some highlights of the year and some of the main takeaways. I think Galway finally getting there is good for the game. I mean, I know maybe as somebody who would have competed against them over the years, you don't really want to feel like that about something like this that happens, but fair play to them eventually for getting there.
It is, Jerry, and I suppose success breeds success, and like there's only so many years you can go and I suppose stay getting to the final maybe and getting beaten without people, I suppose, giving up on that. But I suppose them getting to the Holy Grail finally, every young, I'd say, hurler from 5, 6, 7, 8 years of age up to 22, 23, they're just out hurling mad because now they know that we can win an All-Ireland again. Like it was 1988 the last time they won it. And you know, slowly I suppose the supporters start saying, will we ever get there? Is this just what we are? Like you see how long it's taken Mayo. It's not guaranteed that you're going to get over the line. And I think it's just going to give every club, every person in Galway that hope now. Like we'll see him next year. They'll play with a different confidence. Definitely in the league, Annie, you'll see him playing with a different confidence that they'll win maybe matches they shouldn't win.
Why were they able to do it this year that they weren't previously?
Yeah, see, I suppose there's so many little things. But the one thing I would believe in, I suppose, if you stay knocking on that door, it'll open eventually. And like they had a big win against Tipperary in the league. And when you beat the top teams, that gives you that extra bit of confidence. And like we played them in 2012 All-Ireland final, and I'd say by half time they should have had us beaten, and for some reason we weren't playing well and we stayed in the game and we came back and we ended up beating them, and we didn't even score goals, I don't think, in that second half. Towards nowadays, I think, like, well, this year Galway were different. They just seemed to stay going. The scoreboard didn't seem to matter. They didn't change their tactics. They just stayed going, attacking. So
it seemed like as well that the young lads who came in actually were able to add straight away and live up to their own hype and reputation, because traditionally Galway have these great young teams who would win 2 All-Irelands or back-to-back minors or a minor and an under-21. Oh, this is going to be the team that does it. Yeah. And there was so much expectation and pressure on them that they didn't perform. But this year the young lads were like brilliant for 70 minutes or 75 minutes as required.
They were brilliant, and that's the one danger of coming in as an All-Ireland winning minor onto a team that hasn't won an All-Ireland in so many years. The expectation straight away is for you to deliver, I suppose, your county to the promised land. You look at ourselves or even Tipperary, like a young lad comes on, no matter how good he was as a minor, tips away with 2 or 3 pints, everyone's happy with how he goes.
Yeah.
Towards with Galway, I think they probably expect him just to score 1-5, 1-6 every single match.
Yeah.
Towards UCD this year, Joe, they didn't. It was there was no question. Will we put him in full forward? Will we put him wing forward? He was left out centre forward, and that was it. Didn't matter how the game was going, and he was let tip away. Then there was no questions. Put him in there. That's the place, best place for them. They just left him out there, so everyone was able to find their own feet. And Conor Whelan, I suppose, was the for me the find of the year for them so far. Consistently every single day, both in his defending as a corner forward and his attacking. And I think that's the difference between the teams that go on and win it. When they're not in the game, what are they doing?
Yeah, he's got that real physical aggression that a lot of corner forwards traditionally don't have. They kind of they would shy away. They wouldn't see their job to be to break up or to stop what's coming out. But you know, if you're marking him, you're going to be black and blue at the end of it.
Yeah, well, they're, even in my last few years playing, they were the most physical team I came across. Just when you had the ball, they're so strong. And so you look at all their attackers now, like they're all nearly 6 foot. Bar Connor, and he's still kind of a block of a young fella.
Yeah.
So if you have a big guy like that and well able to hurl, it's going to be much more difficult.
Yeah, they've got the skill set all right.
I think you were making the point at the roadshow before the All-Ireland that if Galway or indeed Waterford had gone on to win it, it would be much tougher than any of the All-Irelands you were involved with, because you came in and you were winning straight away. And being in that winning mentality is much easier. It's a much easier place to be than actually trying to find that promised land and getting into that winning habit.
It is, and I suppose that's where they'll be next year. Like, they don't have to prove themselves to anyone anymore. It's just a case of going on and trying to win another All-Ireland. They have no doubts now that on the big day they can perform. Like when Waterford, who weren't in the game, scored that 2 goals in the first half, they came back into it. I think with 10 minutes to go, there was still only 2 or 3 points in it. So them Galway players were probably still saying to themselves, is this going to happen again? Are we going to get beaten on the line? But they didn't. They went through, got through a tight game. So now going forward, when that happens next year, them doubts won't be there, won't be as strong, because they'll say to themselves, well, on the big days, we done it. And I think that's where it'll be a big lift for them Galway players over the next few years.
What about Waterford? You mentioned them there. Like, it's progress of sorts, but it's not like, so a semi-final last year, a final this year, a big win against Kilkenny for the first time and in 50 years. And you definitely feel like they're the ones who are next primed to make it. But it, as we've talked about Mayo, there's no guarantees that they're going to automatically step up now and be able to win an All-Ireland next year.
Yeah, there's no guarantees whatsoever. And you look at how hard it is to get to an All-Ireland final or a semi-final, what it took for Waterford to get there. There's no guarantees they'll get there again. Now, the only thing is, with Derek back there again, he's very, very level-headed, and any of his interviews that you'd read, he seems to be able to get him into a good place, and the guys will all love going back, they'll all love playing. But I suppose it goes back to the argument of their tactics again, like when it comes to the elite level, so that's usually semi-finals and finals, when you're playing against the top teams, can you stay inviting them on and getting away with it? Because when you play so many guys back, you're inviting basically the opposition on against you. Now, that's okay if you're playing against a forward division or a midfield division that aren't going to put up big scores. But usually you're in an All-Ireland final because you put up big scores. And if you see what happened in the final, like Galway, like in the first few minutes, they had so many scores, five or 6 points got. And you just can't give guys that much, I suppose, space in around their own forward division. So I think Eric is going back, but I think he has big decisions to make in regards to what way they're going to play.
I thought it was interesting too that Austin Gleeson did come out and say, I found it difficult carrying the burden of being Hurler of the Year. And like, you forget that because he's been around and doing magical stuff for 3 or 4 years, you forget that he's still really a kid in comparison to a lot of other of the hurlers who we now come to expect to be seasoned hurlers. So hopefully he'll progress for that.
Yeah, sure. Hopefully the pressure will come off him a bit there now, but like, it is difficult. If you look at any of their forwards, like young Bennett, I know Brick used to win a lot of ball out in the half forward line. Like, Patrick Horn was finding it hard to get into the team. Morris used to come on the last 20 minutes. But it's hard for their forwards to stand out. And he was in, when he was playing his best hurling, Austin was in that forward line. But you're 4 forwards versus 6 backs.
Yeah.
Like, it's very difficult to do what he's trying to do. Whereas if he was playing in the Orthodox 6 versus 6, maybe the same pressure wouldn't be on him. Now, it'd be different if he was put back, maybe centre-back.
Yeah, what do you think of that?
If he was put back and centre-back in that kind of a formation that they're playing, I'd imagine he'd be on a mountain of ball.
Yeah.
Because he could just go off. His, I suppose, strength is his ability to read the game.
Yeah.
So he's just going to be where that ball is. He's so strong, so good there that he'll win it if he's there. So if he's back centre-back, I think you'd see No, I still thought he had a good year as well. I know he was in Novan in the final, but
yeah, he had a good year for anybody. But when you have his talent, you kind of want him to be one of the top hurlers in the country, and so that's kind of where the difference is. Is his future centre back maybe?
It is if they play the formation they're playing to get the best. If we want to see Austin Gleeson being the best hurler in Ireland day in day out, I think that's where. I just don't think anyone can be the best hurler in Ireland up when you're playing a forward division of maybe 4 versus 6 or 3 versus 6.
Yeah.
Because you're just going to be outnumbered unless you win that ball first time. If it breaks left or right, you have no chance. So in their current formation, if you want to see Austin Gleeson maybe hurler of the year again, I would say back in the back somewhere, centre back.
He's kind of living with that tag as well though, isn't it? It's really tough being a talisman. You look at Tony Kelly and it's kind of the same point post-2013. Still puts in really good seasons, but potentially will never reach that promised land of being the best hurler in the country once again.
Yeah, and I suppose it's so funny. Like, a lot of it as well depends on how your team goes and that. Like, you look at Tony Kelly with Ballyhea. We were talking about the same way we're talking about Conor Callaghan at the moment. Tony Kelly last, say, February or March before the All-Ireland final, we'll say, he was the best hurler in Ireland. Mm. Everyone would have been, I suppose, commenting on that fact. He was just brilliant in bringing the Ballyhea to the Munster final and bringing them to the county final. I think the way Tony plays, he would be a much smaller player. So his, I suppose, strength is in his ability to find space and get onto the breaking ball. And what seemed to happen in the club All-Ireland last year was Coola just put a man marker on him and he just followed him. It was like we'll say what Jackie did to Lara Corbett in the All-Ireland final. If you're standing in one position, we'll say full forward, well, the ball is coming in, it's you or your marker wins the ball. But if you have a running type game where you're depending on breaks, which I think Tony does, like Lara Corbett does, if you put a man marker on him, much more difficult because he has no interest maybe in playing the ball. It's just blocking your runs.
You mentioned Tony Kelly. We'll come back to him a little bit later on. But also Conor Callaghan, Owen makes the ridiculous point that he's the best hurler in the country at the minute. He's not quite the best hurler in the country, is he? I mean, there's a big difference between club and intercounty.
The ceiling is incredibly high.
That's a different point. Right now, at this moment, you said he's the best hurler in the country.
Possibly. We don't know the answer, is the thing.
Jerry, I'm sorry, I'm actually going to disappoint you on
all
this
right.
as well. I was only talking about it the other day, and then the whole, well, it's club, he's only playing club. Only, I don't mean that, because club is extremely difficult. To me, Conor Callaghan is the best hurler in Ireland right now. Now, I know the county haven't played, but it just reminds me of DJ. I remember us going to Gorn matches, same as that. And there used to be an extra few hundred people at just their ordinary first round league games and that, just to see DJ. Because when the ball comes into his space, next minute, bzzz, the whole place is just on a buzz. What's going to happen? You look at Conn, and ever since, I'm not sure about the county final, but ever since then, when the ball, that diagonal ball comes in, it's usually two-man full forward line. So it's just a kind of what's going to happen next. Usually he gets the ball, goes round his man, either gets fouled or puts the ball in the net.
Yeah.
To me, I think he's the best hurler in Ireland.
Right.
He reminds me of DJ.
Right, well, that is high praise.
Yeah, and he can't ever get to that level because he won't be putting in the same time into his hurling. And, you know, if he was to get to play inter-county, like, you know, he's not going to have the same touches that he could have if he was playing, you know, 100% of the time.
So he's obviously, 21 turning 22 now, and the talk amongst Dublin football fans is that all the Dublin footballers will be exclusively committed to the footballers at least until they do 5 in a row, because obviously, you know, you say it and it says, oh, straightforward, but it's obviously not straightforward. But at that point, you know, as 23, 24 year olds, him and some of his other teammates could easily decide that they want to be hurlers and hurl exclusively. So that's not too late for him to get back to a level that's really good, if not quite DJ level.
Yeah, it'll depend really on, as you said, the success of Dublin. I would nearly say the opposite. If they stay winning, the hurlers will have no chance of getting Conor Callaghan.
Yeah.
It's only if they start going through rocky patches where they're being beaten maybe in earlier rounds before All-Ireland semi-final stage. Suddenly then you could see, as you're saying, Anthony Cunningham, we could do with him for a month.
Yeah.
But if they were betting at Leinster, whenever, maybe in July or that, and there was still a semi-final and final to play, maybe then they could bring him on. But I think as long as Dublin football are going well, I think it's the time that you're putting into it these days. It's like asking someone to be a professional tennis player and a professional soccer player. Very, very difficult to do. And I don't think, especially the way we're all bought into this team ethos at the moment, I don't think Jim Gavin would be happy to see a guy off for a few weeks, someone else training really hard, yeah. Conn coming back in and still playing.
Yeah.
What do you make of a so-called football man and Pat Gilroy getting that job?
Yeah, well, I suppose he was more in, I suppose, to create just... When he took over Dublin Footballers, he seemed to create a bond amongst all the players, and everyone just bought into it straight away. We saw him less and less, I suppose, in the media. We saw them really, everything was just about Dublin and Dublin winning. So I think they're bringing him in for that reason. That there's, as we all know, there's many Dublin players that aren't on the Dublin panel at the moment. So I think he's back in to just maybe create a spirit inside in that Dublin camp that everyone want to be part of.
Yeah.
And I think that's the reason he's in. And Cunningham's in then to, I suppose, show the hurling side of things. Now, Pat Gilroy is supposedly a big hurling man inside in St Vincent's.
In fairness, he is, yeah.
So
it makes them dangerous though, right?
Dublin, it'll depend. There's so many good teams there at the moment. I don't know how the likes of Danny Sutcliffe and these guys are going to, I suppose, come back into it. What's the hurling going to be like out of it for 2 or 3 years? If they get a good league campaign,
yeah.
Well, then there might be a sudden confidence rush among the whole place. But for them to do well this year, I think they have a good league campaign.
So maybe it's a 2-3 year process.
Yeah, I'd say maybe put in the foundation this year and then we'll start to see Dublin, because all... When a hurler comes to maybe 18, 19, when he leaves the minor age group, maybe suddenly he'll have a decision to make. Instead of at the moment, I think it's basically all football.
Yeah.
So they might get a good hurler. Maybe a Conor Callan in the future, they might get to play the hurling instead.
Yeah, for sure. Davy Fitz was the other big story that we haven't spoken about this year, his re-emergence onto the scene as... it looked like, for all the world, a calmer presence on the sideline until all of a sudden he's in the middle of the pitch. And ultimately, that doesn't seem like it was... it didn't damage the team in any way. And in retrospect, maybe it was exactly what he wanted.
Yeah. Well, I think we all know what Davy brings to it. Like, whether he meant it or not, that's his character. He just gets involved in everything. His enthusiasm is probably his biggest strength in that he's down there in Wexford and everyone wants to be part of that now. I'm not sure what way it is this year. I know there's a few lads after pulling out of the panel for work reasons and that. But last year, just the whole of Wexford, we've seen the biggest attendance ever at a Leinster final, over 60,000.
Yeah.
That's what Davy brings. When you bring enthusiasm that to any job, to any sport, well, it brings guys with you. And I think that's what Davy done, and he got involved and it worked out for him in the end, because they came back, Wexford, in that game and barely got... Well, for a while they did, until the goals started going in. But so he was able to use that then as a... You know, maybe a reason he done it.
He got hammered for the defeat against Waterford. But again, like, I felt like he was always coming back for a second year. I mean, I know there was a bit of to and fro about whether or not that was going to happen. It did feel like he wasn't just going to come for 1 year and then feck off. So that defeat against Waterford feels like you're criticising them for being defensive, but they're getting their defensive structure right. This year, we need to see a bit more from them as an attacking force. That's what the evolution needs to be.
Yeah, I think so, Ger. I think that system works very well in building confidence, building our spirit around the group, which means that we can compete against the big teams. But ultimately, to go on and win these games consistently, you have to, I suppose, as you said, move forward and maybe have some sort of evolution in your team. So I think next year, if they go back and do the same thing, they will probably get a result here and there and that. But I think when you win... suddenly your ambitions are a lot higher. Mm. So suddenly doing what they did last year isn't going to be enough for Wexford or Davy Fitz.
Yeah.
It'll be go on, maybe win a Leinster final, get to an All-Ireland semi-final. So for them to do that, they will have to move forward, I believe.
Do they have the players to do that?
They do, because they've won under-21s, won 3 Leinster under-21s in a row. And like, if you've them players, I know they're probably most of them are there now, well, that shows that you can do it. And they beat Kilkenny in 2 or 3 of them finals. So they have the players. Like, again, Conor McDonald probably had a quite enough end to the year last year. Again, he was playing in that against 2 or 3 guys.
Yeah.
So he wasn't just 50-50, man on man. And they definitely have the players to go on and do it. But they won't be the best team in Leinster. But I think for them to win a Leinster final, they're going to have to push up.
Yeah, I mean, you don't always have to be the best team to win finals.
No.
That's the way the knockout sport works. How did you find the whole year being behind the microphone for a change? Is that something that you had ever thought would happen?
Yeah, no, absolutely not. I didn't. Suppose it all started when I came in with JJ and Taggy in here last February, maybe, or March or that. And we had a chat, and just Nathan asked me, would I be interested? So I said, listen, I'd try it out. But I love the live stuff. You probably guessed that from the games. I love being just there, even the morning of it, you're thinking of what way the game is going to go. And you know, and I do look up a lot of guys on YouTube and that, of how they're kind of commentating on games and that. And so I suppose, what do I try and do? I just try and get involved in the game. Like,
yeah.
You're learning off the best. Like, I'd be trying to read up on Micheál Martí, Marty, like, and you'd be trying to take tips off them guys. And I just found I enjoyed it. I love the live stuff, the game day, because it's bringing back that kind of nerves, the excitement, the enthusiasm. And you're just getting involved in it then, and trying to keep yourself calm then is probably... That's another... maybe think for another day.
Yeah, no, we don't want you to, no need to stay calm too much. I want to show you a bit of Jackie's book, obviously. I think Jackie was on the shortlist for Book of the Year. Were you pissed off when you started to read Jackie's book and you realised he told all your good stories?
Well, it means I can't bring up our
That's
book
what I
was now.
Saying, yeah.
yeah, sure. Jackie is Jackie, and it's always going to be like that once he was bringing out a book.
I think you're mentioned 111 times in the book. I did a quick control F yesterday. I think you're one of the most mentioned people in the book, at least. Hardly a surprise.
Yeah, well, I don't know why that was, but I suppose I came in, I was in school with Jackie since first year in St. Kieran's College. So I suppose we go back a long way, and we were only at his wedding there last week. We had a good old time again. So, no, yeah, not surprised at that, really, I suppose.
So the first one I'm going to show you is you guys are at a GPA All-Stars event, but it clashes with a night in Kilkenny and Langton's. So the GPA organised taxis for you and booze. And so you're on the way home and you're supposed to be in Langton's. You're getting phone calls from everybody going, where the hell are you? And you're like, we don't know. We're in some pub in Clara. You disappear off to the toilets and come back. Where's the second one here? Tommy went to the Jacks, and when he arrived back, he pretended to be a young bull who'd just been let out into a field for the first time. A young bull wouldn't have been as wild. Tommy was leaping around like a demented leprechaun. Then he decided to play a game. You have to disappear around the corner and you have to come back as an animal, and we have to guess what kind of beast you are.
Yeah.
That's the classic, what goes on tour stays on tour, and then it appears in print.
Exactly, yeah. Oh, sure, listen, these things happen, and we had great fun. I suppose you'll probably get that from the team of the book. We had great fun. We were kind of much the same type of characters off the field as we were on it. We were we enjoyed each other's company, and yeah, that was probably just one story of many that maybe I didn't need to have to be in the book. It's all fun for you guys looking and reading, but when it's about yourself, maybe it's not so funny.
That's class for us. That sense of camaraderie that you guys had, and that kind of bond, that it was clearly there at the most difficult moments on the field. When did you guys begin to have that? Like, when did you realise that this team was something special?
Yeah, well, we were lucky enough in that we won an under-21 All-Ireland after no success underage. Tony Forrest, the Lena Co-op, minor. First year under 21, we got beaten in the Leinster semi-final. Last minute, Rory Jacob goal. So it came from having no success, that no one really spoke about us, to suddenly being All-Ireland champions under 21. And when you win like that, you'd see it with the Galway lads, you see it with the Clare boys that won the All-Ireland in 2013. Winning creates a bond with guys, because like that, you're out celebrating together for a few months. And you just get closer, you're spending so much time together. And then, obviously, when you're winning, guys are telling you you're great lads.
Yeah.
And sure, it's all positive, all great stuff. So,
who was on that team, that under-21 team?
The under-21, so there was the one that won it.
Yeah.
Jackie was captain. It was myself, David Herity, Taggy, JJ. They were doing the guys, I suppose, that were... Connor Phelan was on it. He won the All-Ireland in 2003. And a few more guys that are still brilliant club players.
Yeah.
So we'd still all be very close, a lot of us. And so I suppose that's where it started. And most of us were on that team that got beaten the year before by Wexford. So, and we were on the same guys. We were on the minor team that were beaten by Offaly. We're the first Kilkenny minor team to be beaten in 10 years.
Right.
So that's where it came from. And when you win them, we just created that bond.
Yeah, I think Jackie describes you as the black sheep of Kilkenny after that 2000 minor loss to Offaly. I think 11 years was the gap since Kilkenny had been beaten. But like at that time, once the under-21 success starts to come, he tells a very good story about the two of you meeting Brian Cody in town, and he says you're going very well, and you end up dyeing your hair blonde. And I think it ends up working out a little bit better for you because your performances match it, whereas Jackie goes through a bit of a patchy spell of form.
Yes, and we were... 20 at the time, maybe 19 years of age at the time. So you're not really thinking about anything at that stage. You just kind of go with the flow. And the two of us, that was the time of the bleached heads where everyone had them. So we had a bottle of bleach and bleaching, but we weren't thinking really if things don't go well. Cody, and, well, sure, we weren't involved. We weren't involved in Cody's that stage, but the under 21 guys would hold it against us. And sure, the very next game, we went out against Wexford, but we still didn't think anything of it. I think when you're young, that's the joy of being young. You just go with things and you're not thinking of consequences of anything. So, but that was the fun we had, like, you know. And the thing about it is, though, I suppose, looking at that, maybe you might be thinking we were out having a ball the whole time. This was after matches.
Yeah.
So there was no guys going for a few drinks of a Saturday night, you know, other than if there was a championship match on.
Yeah.
So there's no guy sneaking off to the local for 2 or 3 pints. This is all, we won, we lost, and we went out together.
And were you obsessed with hurling for Kilkenny at that stage? Like, was that the be-all and end-all of everything it was? Or did you kind of think, this is something I do, it wasn't incidental?
No, and I suppose, there's so many different personalities in that panel. So you have Jackie, who's obsessed with preparation, obsessed with training, obsessed with, you know, diet, hydration, doing everything that meant he was going to be right on for training and the matches. Towards my, I just loved the games. So as in training games.
Yeah.
So I was doing something that I just absolutely loved. Like, I wasn't brilliant at drinking your 3 litres of bottles of water, 3 litres of water a day. I wasn't brilliant at looking at the calories on the back of food cartons. Mine was just couldn't wait for training. If they didn't play a match in training, then I was devastated. So that's where mine came from. I was doing something I loved.
Yeah.
I wasn't doing something to win in All-Ireland. Like, I was just doing something that I was having a great time doing. And that was probably the difference. And there was probably a lot of different personalities. And lucky enough, in my time, Cody was my only manager. And if I loved matches, he loved matches even more. So we never played training without playing a big match.
Really, every game, yeah.
Every training session, bar the Friday night before a game. Maybe the Wednesday in later years, the week of a game. But from January on, as long as you could do it,
yeah,
the light was there. We played matches and training, and that's what I love doing. I love going in, winning the ball and out.
Would they only be short matches, like 10 minutes, 20 minutes, or would it be a full half hour, 35 minutes?
Yeah, it all changed, with learnings and teachings and that. So when we started, we might have a match for an hour and a half.
Right, okay.
Yeah, back in the early 2000s. But in later years, it was more based on science, and you might train for 3 10-minute spells or 3 15-minute spells.
Yeah.
But every match had to be 100%. There was no taking it easy. So if he felt guys were starting to get maybe a bit burnt out, well, then he'd bring it back to maybe a 15-minute game, but yeah, it was still flat out.
Yeah. Did you get better as a hurler as you went on?
I think the lads around me got better, so maybe that's why I got better, but... No, I don't know.
Because you weren't working, it doesn't sound like you were obsessively working on like some specific aspect of your game. That it's the match play, it's playing in a match and understanding the ebb and flow of a game that is the skill that gets honed by training.
Yeah, and I suppose you become confident in your own ability. So when I started, I didn't have speed. And I wasn't slow, but I had no speed to catch a guy if he won the ball. So at the start, you know, a guy might clip you for 2 or 3 pints. You're constantly trying to, what'll I do next? So you start following him.
Yeah.
But sure, that was the wrong thing to do because he always had that step or two on you and he'd still score 2 or 3 pints. So I started thinking, and this comes with, I suppose, time and confidence. I started saying to myself, well, listen, there's no point in me doing that because I'm playing into his hands. So let's be where the ball is going to be. He still might clip me for 2 or 3 pints. Like a lot of guys, you need to be closer to your man. But I'd be trying to be where the ball is. And my thinking then was, well, that was where I was, I suppose... That was my strength. So if I was where the ball was, that meant my man didn't have it. So that meant I had a better chance of playing well. Now, bearing in mind, to play that game, I had to have fierce, unselfish midfielders. So I had Michael Rice, Derek Ling, Chan Fitzpatrick. If you ever go back over any games, they're always hovering around where I was. So it was okay for me to do that. But if I had a midfielder that was gone, kind of rambling up to the full forward line or that, I could be...
2-on-1.
What's that?
You would have been left in a 2-on-1 situation with his man, maybe.
It'd be a 1-on-1 as regards my lad would be out there, but I would be after giving him 10 yards of space.
Yeah.
He'd get the ball and go around me every time. So
say if you are in that position and the ball's up in the air, Talk to us about what you do to potentially give yourself the advantage, because some of your opponents have said there could be a hurl flying anywhere. Like it's, I think you quote a very famous Christy Ring quote about just swing everywhere if you don't know where the ball is in your Laker Gael. Like I think that's certainly a huge feature of us, and you definitely got away with a lot of stuff. Maybe it's because of the diminutive size or something like that, but or maybe it was just acuteness, which how you went about it.
Well, I think it's a different game now. I wouldn't get away with it now because everything is a yellow card. Like, you know, if you, like when I said that, it was probably worked maybe up to about 3 years ago, 4 years ago. But now with television cameras and whatever and everything, if you do anything like that now, it's a yellow card or you're brought up with the CCC. So I think for any young lads maybe, because a few young lads said it to me after that, you know, pulling the ball and if you can't see the ball, pull where you think it is. But I would say to them, don't be doing that because you can't do that anymore.
Yeah.
Because if you misjudge it now, like I think when I was growing up and playing hurling, I think the referee used this judgment that if this guy is trying to be dirty or if this guy is trying to pull a wrong stroke, then he dished out the yellow and red cards. But I think if he believed and he would, the referee, you know, they'd be usually very much researched and all the hurlers. If this guy is going for the ball and that, did maybe, you know, give him the benefit of the doubt. They don't do that anymore because they're reviewed so much now as well.
Yeah.
So, and just, it is techniques. Like, swinging everywhere, I don't think that. But listen, I'm not going to try and change the way people think at this stage. That they all have their own opinions. But it's technique. I will say that. I'm not going to come out because I'm still hurling. So I can't give away any secrets. But it's technique. Mm-hmm. So the ball is coming down. If there's something between that ball and your hand, like,
if it happens to get hit by your hurl, so be it.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't say hit, but I'd say, you know, technique. I'd say it's all techniques.
Can we stick that picture up again? The you're getting staples, I think. It looks like it's Croke Park, is it?
No, that's the National Hurling League game against Galway.
Right.
In 2000 and
you look three. Yeah, you look pretty young in it, all right.
Yeah, so 20 years of age. I was always very young looking there. But yeah, that was the day the staples. So you didn't have to have helmets. Not sure what happened on that day. Just got a clip of a hurl and came off for a few minutes, and it was after scoring a good few pints. It was one of those days where everything was going well.
You're getting back on.
You're getting back on there towards maybe, you know, if you're there. I always want to go back on anyway. So Tighe, in fairness to him, three or four staples and you're back on. You weren't gone for 10 minutes or anything.
Yeah. Staples sound sore.
Not at the time because...
The
adrenaline is there, but they were sore afterwards.
Yeah, I'm sure. So the evolution of your game, right? There's a period of time where you're kind of getting all-stars in every line, and then eventually you settle into the half-back line. That was always the plan, was it, to migrate back towards the half-back line? Like, in retrospect, in Cody's head, do you think that was his plan? Get Tommy in the team, get him game time, get him experience, but we want him to be a right half-back.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so. I'd say just... the way it worked out, that was where I was home. It was like, I never played in midfield or the forwards, bar one or two games, until I played with Kilkenny. I was always a corner back. Even wing back, I didn't play there till I was a Kilkenny minor. So it was never even thought of to play me in the forwards. And then I suppose I was young at that stage, so Brian felt that he wanted me to play, but he didn't want me in the backs, I suppose. And then just... I was very attacking in regards...
Yeah, but were you a defensive forward as well? Like, would you have kind of felt part of your job was to stop their half-back line from launching attacks, or were you exclusively effective and willing to clip three or four points?
Yeah, no, I was exclusively effective, clip three or four points if I could. Go everywhere, and maybe that's why I went back into the backs. I probably wouldn't stay in my position. And even the year before, 2005, you see, we played Galway, and I was playing midfield. And I had a very good game, but the problem was I was marking David Tierney. You remember David, the long hair coming out of the white round micro helmet, and he had a brilliant game as well. So I'd say Brian just said, listen, we need to get this guy into a set position so that he has a man to mark and he'll stay somewhat in that position. So I think that was the reasoning why he wanted to put me back there, is because it was always where I was home as the backs. I was always facing the ball, where I...
Is that a conversation? Is that like a chat, or is it just there's a training game and you're playing right half back and that's it? It's done.
Yeah, no, it's a simple enough conversation that, Tommy, you're playing the backs. Go out and play.
That's it.
There's no where would you rather play or where would you like to play, which I wasn't into anyway.
Yeah.
I'm not into talking to managers or, you know what I mean? Like, why is he going to tell me you're playing well? You know you're playing well. You're playing poor, you know you're playing poor.
Yeah.
I think a player knows how he's playing. a player knows what he's doing wrong.
The specifics of the role, even at right half back, we want you to stay in that position because our half back line is going to effectively be this very important line for us for the next 5 years, and we want you to stay there. Or is it like just play right half back and do what you do?
Yeah, well, it changes the whole time, but at that particular time, we were kind of zonal, if you like, so we played our positions.
Yeah,
because they started to run us. So a half hour line, I think it was 2004, we played Wexford, and every time their half forward, right half forward rang to the left half forward position, and the backs were running with them. So next minute there was just a load of space created.
Okay, yeah.
So it did its job perfectly. So for the next few years then, from 2006 for probably 3 or 4 years, it was all zonal. So if Brian Hogan's man came running out to me, so that was Niall McCarthy saying the six final, if he was going to run out, I was going to stay and go with him. And Brian would shift across maybe and pick up my guy. So just for a few years we played zonal, but we had to change that again after we were beating the 2010 final.
Who decided about the zonal stuff? Like, is that a conversation? I guess it has to be, like, this is our plan. And how's that communicated?
Well, basically we used to have a lot of team talks. So like a business would have now, like you'd have your chats and different groups would come up with different things. But it usually ended up with what Brian wanted. So, you know, but like you had such so many great heads, like, you know, you had Henry and JJ, Jackie, like brilliant hurling heads. Like, so I think that was the great thing about the Kenny management, in that they were willing to, I suppose, tap into that knowledge. And, you know, they never came up to you maybe personally and said, well, what do you think we should do? But, you know, maybe 2 or 3 times a year, maybe a bit less. Once or twice a year, we'd have meetings on how we're going to win the All-Ireland and that. And, you know, usually it kind of, we looked on how we were going. And that time we were winning the whole time. So it was just to try and keep it going. Obviously, when we lost then 4 years later, we had to change things around a bit.
Because it seems Brian can often be quite set in his ways, or that's just the way we perceive him. But that's clearly not the case. He was willing to adapt.
Yeah, and I don't think you're going to last as long as Brian Cody did if you're going to be a dictator and everything is black and white. He's very much a common sense would be just a massive part of Brian's set up. And if he felt it was going to improve his team, well, his whole number one priority was the Kilkenny hurling team. It wasn't Brian Cody. It wasn't Jackie. It wasn't David Hurty. His was, if it's going to help this Kilkenny hurling team, I'm willing to do it. And he felt from times that it was worth asking the players, you know, as a group, and definitely probably paid off for him. And if he liked it, I suppose he went with it. If he didn't, he discarded it. So common sense, I would say, was a massive part of bringing Cody set up.
Is the defeat to Tipperary in the drive for five, is that the one that stops the zonal? Because you realise it stops working that day? Is that what happens?
It is, and it probably stopped working the year before in 2009, only for PJ Ryan had such a brilliant game. Like, they could have put 3 or 4 goals past us, more goals that were chances that Tipperary forwards usually take.
Yeah.
But PJ Ryan was just in the form of his life. So it probably stopped working the year before. And then 2000. Yeah.
But you didn't need to change it because you won the All Ireland.
Well, true. Yeah, when we win.
Don't broke, don't fix.
We probably did need to change it. But because, as you said, if it's not broken, don't fix it. So the year after then, sure, Lara, I think, scored. Tipperary definitely, I think, got 7 goals in the Munster final against Waterford. I think Lara could have got maybe 4 of those. So we felt that Delar was, he used to win by just making breaks, and then he's on because there was loads of space created.
Yeah.
So that's why we put some on Jackie on Lar. So that cut out, no matter whether it broke, Jackie would be beside him. So that at least we know space as such.
Yeah.
And we had to go back to man on man then at that stage.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's a tricky enough job because Lar's obviously really fast.
Yeah.
It's like you're man on man on him. But it worked.
It worked, but you see,
you weren't matching pace with pace. It seems counterintuitive that man on man, you're putting that really fast guy against Jackie, and it's kind of it's an imbalance. But actually, it's not really. It's about making sure he doesn't get the head of steam, is it?
That's it. And if Lara was number 15 versus number 2, we'll say Jackie, then it might have been a different game because you're talking about explosive off the mark stuff.
Yeah.
But the way Lara was playing, it was constantly moving. So there was never such a sprint.
Yeah.
It was kind of constantly going, moving. And sure, Jackie was with him the whole time then because Jackie was probably one of our fittest players, if not the fittest, on our panel. So I'd say that's why he was picked, because he was the fittest. Plus, he was very, very mentally tough, and he was willing to forsake his game for it.
Tell us about the defeat in the drive for five. Like, does it rankle now, or do you kind of go, well, we won 4 in a row, so it doesn't really matter? Like, what's your take on it now at this remove?
Yeah, no, I've no regrets about it whatsoever. Like, you know, the 5-0 meant absolutely nothing to me. You know, it's to be nice looking back now after winning 5-0, I know, but no, because we went on and we won 0-11, and the way I look at it, 11 was a great day.
Yeah.
And maybe without 10, we wouldn't have had 11. Because when it comes down to it, and like, you're always talking about performance and you're reading books and, you know, you're listening to different coaches and it's all about performance. But I think ultimately when it does come down to it, it's about winning. And it's about that feeling. It's about that feeling that you have when the final whistle goes. That only after winning maybe as in the final game, so whether that's an All-Ireland final, a county final, say a World Cup final, that's when you get the ultimate joy. So we got that then after 11 again. And yeah, it's nice looking back now after winning 4 in a row. But to me, it's just like now I'm craving for another win.
Yeah.
You know, we haven't won in a while there now. You know, my last time involved with Kilkenny was 2014. And even that, I obviously didn't get the same unbridled joy because I was a sub that year. But I think that's what you're craving. So records and that, they're nice. And they're nice when people say them to you. But it's winning is where I can see now, like, and I wouldn't have been like Sir Ray Keane and these guys. No, the only thing is he probably didn't enjoy it when he won it.
Yeah, he says that he needed to enjoy it a bit more in respect.
So I can see where he's coming from, but I do enjoy the victories, and we enjoy the victories as in you're delighted for maybe a month or two.
Yeah.
But that's what you crave, is that.
Was the dressing room after 2010 an inspiration in 2011, or did you kind of just park it and go, we now have a rival who are worthy adversaries? Like, what was that dressing room like?
Yeah, well, the dressing room was, I suppose, listen, we were so used to winning.
What do we do now?
Yeah, it wasn't it wasn't complete devastation, like, because, you know, if you're going up trying to win your first one, say if Galway, I'm sure the Waterford dressing room this year was absolute devastation because you're wondering, can we ever get here again? But I think for us, we're after winning 4 in a row, so it wasn't, we're after tasting victory 4 times in a row. So it only started to develop then over the week or two after that, the months or two. You're watching the Tipperary players in the papers. You're watching them up at all the awards. You're watching them on the Late Late Show. You've seen it all. That's when it all starts to, because, you know, I suppose you start to get envious and you know what a great time they're having and you want to have that. So I would say not just the dressing room, I'd say the 3 or 4 months after. It was definitely the hungriest winter we ever put in, I think, in my time, because when we used to meet each other, we'd be talking about putting away for Tipperary. We were playing them in February. And, you know, it wasn't the All-Ireland final we were waiting for. We just couldn't wait. I think we had him in Turles and we just couldn't wait for it. And it was an enjoyable winter from that point of view as well.
I'd say the carrot of losing 2010 was even kind of more of a carrot to you that year than, say, Waterford's loss this year will be to them, because, as you say, you had tasted success 4 times in a row. You knew exactly how good it was. So it added to that hurt of the defeat as well.
Yeah, definitely. And we could use it as motivation, I suppose. Waterford can use it as motivation, but they also have to, I suppose, build belief in that they can do it. They can perform on the biggest stage. So I think that would be the difference between the two losses.
When the end comes, was it obvious? Like, did you know that's the end, I have to go? Or was it I can still do this?
Yeah, well, I still thought I could do it, but I wasn't being picked. I mean, mine made up in April that year. I was after training from... It's funny, the older you get, the more preparation you put into it.
But you're still only 30, 31 at this stage.
Still only, I was 31 that year, yeah. But there was 4 of us, though. There was Jackie, Hoagie, JJ and myself, all over the 30.
Yeah.
And we were after, obviously, getting beaten, and Clare were that young team after winning 2013. So Brian obviously had it in his head that he needed a shake-up here, and there wasn't going to be 4 of us. And so I wasn't playing. I played something like 2 matches between November and in 6 months, April. And as I told you earlier on, like, it wasn't the All-Irelands. Yes, they were brilliant and that's what you wanted. But the first thing was, I love playing.
Yeah.
So once I wasn't being picked, that was it. And then he put me up into the forwards. So I didn't enjoy the forwards. Like, I don't enjoy the forwards. So, you know, and I came back into form, but I still wasn't as good as what was there in the forward division, no matter what kind of form I was in.
Did it make it easier that the brother came in for you initially at that time in the league? Or worse?
Not really, no, it was still hard. But it made it easier that, like, I was still shouting, you know, I was still delighted for him. Mm. Like, there was no, I know usually when a guy replaces you, you're really hoping maybe he doesn't go so well, or but the team still wins, you know. But then you grow bonds with guys and you don't want that to happen either. But you're then, when it's your brother all together, you definitely can't wish he doesn't go well. So I was delighted for him, and I was delighted for a lot of the Kenny players that hadn't won. Conor Fogarty, like, was a sub. You know, you have to try and think, like, because otherwise you become selfish and that. So I was trying to think, how am I going to enjoy this? So I was thinking, first of all, obviously you're trying to get back in the team, but when you don't get back, how are you going to enjoy it? So I was just thinking that the likes of Lester Ryans, Conor Fogarty's, Park, these guys were all subs when I was playing. So when I was winning All-Irelands, it wasn't because of myself. Them lads were driving us in training. So I had to kind of park the bus a little bit and say, listen, it's time to help out these guys. They helped out myself and everyone else long enough. So that's the way I was kind of trying to. But it didn't take away. It was tough now.
Did you think that was actually a hard year for Brian? Because it seems, especially from reading Jackie's book, that you were one of his favourite players. He certainly saw something of himself in you. Did he have some difficulty kind of leaving you on the bench that summer, knowing what you had done for the county before?
I'd say I'm sure it was, because obviously would have had a strong bond with Brian, as a lot of players did. And, you know, after winning so much with your players, there's going to be that natural affection towards guys. And I'm sure it was very difficult for him, but it goes back to the job, and you'd often hear him saying it, is if he can't make the correct decision for the team, well, then he shouldn't be in the job. So I'd say he realised how tough it was, but said, listen, I'm here for a reason. I'm not here to keep Tommy Welch happy or to keep anyone happy. I'm here for Kenny to win All-Irelands.
Did he have many conversations about that process of kind of leaving you on the bench for the entire season?
Yeah, no. No conversations whatsoever, but I didn't want him, you know. Like, yeah. Some guys would have went up to him, I think.
Go away and work on this and you might get back in, because it's all nonsense, right?
Yeah, yeah, I think. And I knew as well, like, if it was back in the backs, it would have been different, because once I came into form there, then you'd be knocking down the door, like, I should be playing, because you have that confidence in yourself. But in the forwards, I never really believed, probably. I knew I could hurl, and there's days I could score 4 and 5 points, but
when you moved to the forwards, that was it. You were forward. You weren't actually trying out for the backs anymore. In training matches, you always played forward. Is that what happened?
Always played forwards.
I just assumed that was like get some game time into him, and then we move him back into the backs later on in the summer. But that didn't happen.
Yeah, no, that didn't happen. I was in the forwards the whole time from then on.
All right.
Time to time, maybe you might be put back midfield or that.
Yeah.
But
I could just wander back into the half back line here and remind you all
that. Yeah. Make a few switches myself.
Yeah. Ryan just said, I didn't hear it.
The funny thing about it is, like, and you wouldn't hear it spoken about much, but when you're actually dropped, it's nearly worse when the team is going well, because suddenly you realise they don't need me. And towards, at least if the team, like for Jackie, they were losing. So at least he can go off in his own head and say, well, he could have picked me there. Yeah. And, you know, I could have been the difference. Towards, I didn't even have that kind of comfort that if he picked me now, we could be winning. Mine was, well, he hasn't picked me and they're still winning well. So
that's a harsh lesson, all right?
Yeah, it is tough.
There was one last thing we wanted to bring up from Jackie's book. This is a story about Tony Kelly. And this is, you're all away, right? You're on a night out in Wexford for Brian Dowling's stag. We were all juiced up on the Friday night, especially Tommy Walsh. He approached me with that glint in his eye, shining with a mad fusion of craziness and intent. Who do you want? What? I want Tony Kelly anyway. What are you raving about, Tommy? You can have Podge if you want him. He looks over at JJ. JJ, you can take Conor McGrath. And the whole night it keeps going. This is you just getting into their heads. This young bucks can't have us.
No, I think it was like the team Tipperary was beat us in 2010. I was probably saying that for 3 months about Bonner Mar. So I don't know, listen, it's just a bit of crack. And
he tells the Bonner story in the book as well, I think.
Oh, does he? Yeah. So I didn't see it now, but like, you could switch around a few guys: Tony Kelly, Bonner, Niall McCarthy, John Gardner. Like, it depended on the year that it was a different player probably inside in that.
Yeah.
But it was just,
the psychologist would say this is visualization, where you're like focusing on your enemy and then it's going to happen for you. Is that like you're just thinking, no, I'm getting obsessed about them?
Yeah, well, I used to get obsessed with a bit of fun in my own head, you know.
Yeah.
Now, the unfortunate was I wasn't picked then to play him, but I came on the league against Clare as a sub, and I remember the first ball came in anyway, Conor Ryan, he was the centre back, Conor Ryan, and I gave away a free, just a bit kind of too enthusiastic coming in, and he was kind of shouting down something at me. I don't know what he was saying. There was nothing too untoward or anything like that, but I go up and kind of hit him a little bit of a shot. And, you know, and I remember after the game, I could have got sent off. I wasn't sent off, but I remember Brian came up to me after the game, and, like, and he was there, like, you can't be doing that. Like, what did James was after saying something to me coming on, James McGarry, because he knew, like, first of all, after losing, and then I wasn't being picked, so I was mad to get on. And he obviously told me to maybe be calm when it was going on, but sure, I wasn't listening to any of this. I just wanted to get on and win the ball. And next minute I did that and probably could have got sent off. And Brian came over to me in Carlow. We were training Carlow that time, and said to me, what did James say to you before he went on that match? And I was like, I knew where it was going. And I said, nothing. Just trying to get a few pints. And he wasn't going away. And he said, no, what did he say to you? And he said, well, score a few pints. No, no, he didn't. He said, when you go on there, don't go mad. And what did you do? You went feckin' mad. So, you know, that brims from all that kind of talk. Is a visualisation. I didn't think so at the time, but maybe looking back, maybe it is now, because when you do go on, there is that intent, like, but it's enjoyable. But I love that whole side of things as well, you know.
Well, I'm glad that we managed to rekindle some of that sense of excitement for you this summer. Pachki on Periscope says, Tommy Walsh, 100% the best dressed guest ever on Off The Ball AM. This is true. Who succeeds Brian Cody when the time comes? Henry Steffen took his first steps into managerial stuff last night with the club.
Yeah. Was that announced last night, was it?
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, yes. Henry, I'm sure he will have ambitions to be a Kilkenny manager. There's a few very good guys in Kilkenny. Like Martin Fogarty was there before as a selector. Adrian Finan was underage manager for a few years, under 21 and that. You have Henry himself, a few other guys. Like, I know Brian a long time and I don't see him going anywhere.
Yeah.
So it'll depend on when he does decide to hang up the boots, because everyone will be at different stages of their careers then. So
it could be a decade away. Like.
So it could be a decade again. Yeah. So it'll be a different, you know, it could be Conor Fogarty or some young fella now, you know.
He was in the office yesterday doing a photo call with Pat Kenny and a couple of young lads with hurls, and I was like, yeah, that is a fit and healthy looking man. Not a pick on him, like.
And he loves what he's doing.
Yeah.
And you, like yourself there, Ger, guys, when they love what they're doing, they end up being brilliant at it, like. And, you know, Brian Cody will stay going like that for as long as he's enchanted. And his wife, Elsie, very much loves it as well. So he has that whole he has that support from home.
Fierce Andy watching the show at 3:45 p.m. since I'm living in Taiwan, says Andy. Good man yourself. A great way to get through the last hour of work. Thanks very much for that. And then a load of people, Dan on Twitter and Suzanne, had the same question. Who was the toughest opponent you ever faced?
Ben O'Connor from Cork.
Right.
Now, you have to rewind back to the time it was as well. We had a massive rivalry with that Cork team, as you know. And Ben, like, used to come across him a few times. But I suppose I loved him first and foremost as a hurler. Would have watched him when they beat Kilkenny in 99. He had a brilliant year that year. He was a corner forward, but he was so tough, he was so skillful. He was Newtown Shandrum were a brilliant club team at the time, and he himself and Jerry used to run the roost with them as well. So I had massive respect for him as a hurler before even marking him, and then to get the chance to mark him, then, you know, there was no quarter given, like. So he was the toughest I've marked.
You would have been a cornerback coming onto the team at that stage, marking him as a corner forward.
No, it would have been different games, challenge matches, league games, championships. So usually around wing back, it would have been.
Right, okay, because he would have played a lot of midfield as well, like, kind of as a third midfielder.
Well, Ben wouldn't have really. No, that would have been Jerry. Jerry spent all his time out there. Ben would have, as a half forward. Yes, he would have probably covered back a bit more. He was kind of went everywhere. He's nearly like maybe myself as a forward.
Yeah.
And a quarter forward he was, but yes, it was kind of.
Did you have to follow him? Like, was that at that
no,
stage?
No, because I would have been wasting my time. I wouldn't have caught him. So I had to hope that the boys were doing their job, that someone had mishit it and it had come straight back down to me. But now, the lad that gave me the most trouble would have been Danny Sutcliffe.
Right.
He gave me a horrendous time. And, Danny.
What are we talking here, 2012?
It was a few years. 13, probably 14. What was it? Yeah, 14, sure. Started my last game. No, it was
in the
last
league game. Yeah.
Well, mine only, I was flying it. And next minute, he scored 1-3 in about 5 minutes. I was took off at half time, so. But I used to follow him.
Yeah.
We were kind of playing a different game at that stage. We were kind of.
Supposed to follow.
Yeah, and I wasn't following him. And it just didn't work, like, you know.
Right, so maybe Danny Sutcliffe has plenty more to offer this season if he comes back and recapture that for him.
Absolutely brilliant hurler. But he needs to find his love for the game, I suppose. Yeah.
We're done, Tommy. Brilliant. Thanks a million.
Thanks, Jared.
It's been a pleasure. We'll see you again tomorrow. Take care.
You've been listening to a highlights podcast from OTBAM. If you want to watch us live, we're on Facebook, Twitter and YouTube every morning from 7:45 a.m.